The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
You're listening to Wrestling Night in Canada on the Shining Wizards Network with your hosts, Matt Copper, Dustin Maruca, and Snowy White.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another exciting episode of Wrestling Night in Canada. I'm Snowy White.
I'm Matt Copper.
I'm Dustin Maruca.
Hey, bros, what's going on?
Oh, not much, man. I'm just, I realized that on my health card the other day that it didn't have my current address, so I applied for a new one, and as soon as I get that new one, I realize that I'm eligible to get my first shot, because I work in the food industry, so as soon as my new health card comes in, I'm going to apply to get my first shot of the 5G chip vaccine thing for mind control, and I'm going to probably grow an extra limb or something.
There we are. Yes. I believe in the last episode I mentioned I've got my first one. The whole snowy manor has gotten the first one, and I'm just waiting for that super serum to kick in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, dude? What's going on?
Haven't got mine yet.
No.
But you're hanging in there?
Yeah, so far.
Everyone's good and healthy and doing well, and apart from all the usual trials and tribulations of life, because, we're going to have a pretty stacked show once again. But just for a heads up in case anyone's wondering, no, this isn't going to be a marathon 3.5 hour episode or whatever. Last one, yeah, because that interview that we had with none other than Nasty Ronnie of the Florida Territories and, of course, Nasty Savage, that went on for a good hour.
It seems.
And, you know, part of me was saying, well, maybe I should do this. Maybe I should cut this. Maybe I should edit this and all that. But no, like that whole chat was absolute gold. So I really didn't really want to touch it. And since we are a show that's totally of its own, you know, there's no real time limit or really what we, you know, we don't have any shackles. We're not handcuffed to the turnbuckle or anything like that. We don't need RoboCop to save us from a cage outside the ring or anything like that. We are our own a squared circle, shall we say, and it's always a good time. So really looking forward to this. We got a lot to talk about, including the latest Impact pay-per-view. There's a lot of shit that's gone down in the wrestling world, and I think everyone is going to enjoy this week's turnbuckle talk as well. It was one of those ideas where we had to put on our thinking cap and really give it the because it's our own fantasy booking as well. Mm-hmm. We decided, okay, you know what? We're going to suspend disbelief, and we're going to jump into the pro wrestling DeLorean if we have to, and just kind of bounce all over dimensions.
Maybe, shall we say. Maybe doing that thing they did in Wayne's World where they go,
there we go. I did lots of that when compiling my list, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what you guys have come up with our idea of who would make Wicked Horsemen. But before we get there, I gotta say, I really enjoyed Impact's Rebellion. This is just the type of pay-per-view that I enjoy. Like I said, we got a lot going on, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time going over everything in finite details or anything, but for the most part, yeah, I was thoroughly entertained, and I like where some of the ideas and wrestlers are going to go next. First off, they started with the NXT title match, a triple threat.
The Forbidden Door has been opened again.
So Karrion Kross came back to Impact. And
yeah, there we are.
Okay. Killer Kross is returned.
That's right. Well, Josh Alexander, good Canadian boy, ended up bringing home the title. And I'm glad. Okay, like when the North split, when Ethan Page tore his own heart out and then ran to AEW, which I kind of like what they're doing with him there now. That kind of left Josh Alexander like on his own. And it's like, well, what are they going to do with this guy? Are they going to just get another teammate for him and keep him in the tag team division or what? But it's looking like they're giving him a push. And I like the idea of that because on his own, like they're giving him a strong, you know, an athlete's athlete, like a Kurt Angle type.
He's got that Greco-Roman look to him, I guess, or the Olympian wrestler look to him with the headgear and
Right. And I really dug it, and I found myself cheering for him, you know. And so, yeah, new champion in the X division. Okay, you guys are going to have to help me out here with this. Okay, first of all, they had a big six-man tag, Violent by Design, against Eddie Edwards, James Storm, Chris Sabin, and Willie Mack, which saw the debut of W. Morrissey.
Yes, okay. The former Big Cass.
Big Cass, okay, yeah.
Or as people say, Giant Edge.
Giant Edge.
Oh, okay.
I saw that a few times, too, because if you, like, zoom in on his face on that entrance, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, he's got the same, like, pointy, kind of pointed center of his face that Edge has, I guess.
Yeah.
Pointy nose, yeah. Okay, I can see it now.
Edge just grew a few more inches.
Yeah.
I was just kind of thrown a bit by the whole W. Morrissey, you know, and it's like,
what I think it's his real name, isn't it?
Yeah, his real name is William Morrissey. I just couldn't call him Will Morrissey, or but I guess W. Morrissey it is.
Then they gave him a big push. They gave him a strong showing, and I guess he's going to be, you know, he's going to be the big. He's going to be the muscle.
Yeah, he's really cut now too. I noticed he didn't look like that in WWE. Yeah. Kind of had I won't say he had a gut to him, but he certainly didn't have the abs that he does now. He definitely looks like he got off the booze and really hit the gym really hard. So good for him.
Good on him. Yeah. A little while down the card, Tony Khan showed up along with Aubrey Edwards, Jerry Lynn, and Tony Schiavone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which that was kind of a surprise. I wasn't expecting to see that. And they announced they had to pull the thing. Well, we're in an impact. You have an impact ref, and it's in an impact ring, and we want our guy Aubrey to be the second ref and all that. And okay, fine. You know, I can go with that. It was cool. But I don't have a whole hell of a lot of nice things to say about Tony Khan, honestly, and all that. So to chuck shit at the TV when he showed up, which I did, okay, it works. It works, you know. Like when I watch wrestling here in Snowy Manor with the missus and her mother and all that, they yell and scream at the heel and all play it up.
It's like watching wrestling here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My grandma's yelling at the TV.
Oh, yeah, it's and that's the way it's supposed to be.
Knows what that's like now.
Well, wait until I'm able to join you guys, because I like getting grandma going, too, as well.
Yeah. And Rob.
Of course.
So funny.
Yeah, grandma didn't like it. She didn't like the fact that I like Chris Jericho.
Well, I know who to cheer for. Well, no, he's a face now.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, but okay. I think she still doesn't like the list thing that he did in his last WWE run.
Ah.
I have a problem with that, if I remember correctly.
You just made the list.
Yeah. You know what happens, Grandma? You know what happens?
That's right.
You just made the list.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. As well, new tag team champions in Jordynne Grace and Rachel Ellering. Basically, you know, kind of. Well,
only her third match.
Yeah, she hadn't been with Impact very long, and I don't know where they're going with this, but I guess maybe it was just a way to get Ellering, you know, introduce her strong and all that, because she got the clean pin and new champs. Same thing, Finn Juice against the Good Brothers. There was a clean pin with a small package, and they're pushing that angle a little further now. I really enjoyed the Deanna Purrazzo title defense against Tennille Dashwood, the Queen's Gambit match, which saw the return of Taylor Wilde.
Yeah, I saw that, and she was on Impact last week too.
Yeah, yeah. Do you guys? That was been a long time.
Yeah,
it goes to show, because they said she's back after 10 years.
Yeah, that is quite a while.
And I didn't think it was that long.
Holy no. Shit. And last week when I was watching Impact, I don't have the Fight Network on my cable package, and so I can't watch it on TV. But okay. I do have, I'm subscribed to Impact on Twitch. So I just watch Impact on that every Thursday, except for today, obviously. But during commercial breaks, they don't, instead of showing commercials, they just show old footage from classic Impact moments.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then last week they happened to play Taylor Wilde's Knockouts title win. And so, yeah, that was kind of a blast, an appropriate blast from the past, if I do say myself.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice break from watching the Steiner Math promo over and over again, which they like to play a lot. But, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see her again, you know, and it's going to be interesting to see where they go. They can only do better with her than what the NWA are doing with Taryn Terrell right now. Are they ever really dropping the ball with her over on the other channel? Because instead of, you know, her original, I don't want to say character, when it was just her and Gail Kim had those wicked series of, like, clinics...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're using her dollhouse gimmick in the NWA, and that's just cringeworthy. I'm not liking that at all, so hopefully they kind of mix that up. So yeah, looking forward to see what they're doing with Taylor Wilde. And the main event, Rich Swann versus Kenny Omega, title versus title, Impact versus AEW. Now, obviously... just the fact that, like, Impact doesn't have the audience it once had. Okay, this definitely didn't have the cachet, you know, that the WWF versus NWA in 1987 would have had.
No. Know,
for a title versus title match. But they really gave it their all, and they tried to give it as much of a big fight feel that they could. They brought in Mauro Ranallo just specifically for that match.
Yeah, I heard some clips from that online. And, like, I miss Mauro Ranallo being in ECW, or not ECW, NXT. Sorry, we're getting all of our company stuff tonight.
There's just so many of them, yeah.
Yeah, I miss
Mauro. So many wrestling promotions were just like, this one, and then, wait, no, not this one.
Yeah. No, but when Mauro Ranallo, he made takeovers like so awesome in the last few years, like especially in like 2017, 2018. Like, he's just so over the top and so, like, I don't know. you just can't help but love him. Like when he said, like, you can't spell Omega without OMG. I was like, oh, classic.
Classic. I hear Michael Cole now.
Yeah. Vintage
plastic Carmelo.
And it's going to be, I think, even though, like, a lot of people, or at least not as many as they probably would have liked, have seen it, it's definitely going to go down as a classic match. Mm-hmm. You know, it went back and forth. It was really strong. You know, Omega had his posse in his corner. Eddie Edwards and Willie Mack came out for Swan. Like I said, it went back and forth. But what I liked about it is that it wasn't overbooked. You would think that with all these people at ringside and the second referee and, mm-hmm. you know, there's going to be shenanigans 5-6 times over until there is finally a fluky win and all that. But no, it was a hard fought, strong, you know, Swan and Omega definitely left it out on the mat. And it was a clean pin with the one winged angel. So yeah. Now that's where we are, you know, him holding like all of the belts. I will say it's time to get rid of that TNA belt.
Well, he still has it.
I know that drives yeah. me nuts. Okay. Like, okay. What TNA was doing with it. I get it, but it's been unified, retired, yeah. get rid of it and all that. Omega walking around with it. That's just ego. That's just another belt for me to carry.
Yeah. Well, or another one for, Nakazawa to carry, more like.
Right. right. And throughout the match, they were name-dropping Roosh, the Ring of Honor champion, and Fatu from MLW and all that. So this is cool. I like this because, you know, back when I was a teenager, the last time there was a title versus title match from this magnitude, I guess, was the AWA versus the world-class title. I can't think of, you know, anything that happened, you know, in the last 30 years like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes me think it's really too bad, you know, like they were doing this angle. And I realized you can't control, you know, world crises and all that. And the Impact is doing what they can with what they've got. And you got to strike while the kettle is hot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really too bad that for Impact that there was no real audience.
Yeah, it was there. Just canned audience sounds. So mm-hmm. that's like the one downfall of this match, I guess, yeah, would be that it happened in front of nobody.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just, it would have been a pretty good cash cow for Impact because, okay, when there's a big eight, like, okay, the only people watching wrestling now are wrestling fans,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
they like to travel, you know, mm-hmm. for yes. big AEW cards and all that. It's not like when AEW had, you know, their first All In or Money for Nothing or yeah, whatever, you know, the place was packed. But it was probably only about 30% of the residents of that city. The rest were destination
travelers. Yeah.
Yeah. And I honestly think, you know, this would have been one of those matches, and it would have been a huge gate for Impact.
You know? Yeah, I could see, like, with that headliner on there, were they allowed to have like a full capacity crowd, I could definitely see that match or that card selling out or selling most of, like, at least like a smaller sized arena. I'm not going to go like big time here.
Oh yeah. We're not talking a WrestleMania stadium, but
yeah, but like a lower, like a 10,000 seat arena probably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. For sure. That's exactly what I was thinking. So yeah, this is really the whole thing with Omega having the title, and now Impact has to regroup, and it's kind of a little bit of, like I said, going back to the Jerry Lawler versus Kerry Von Erich feud, mixed in with a little bit of the NWO. You know, it's got a lot of, it's making a really cool wrestling stew on Impact right now. Mm-hmm. And if people aren't watching it because, you know, what's her face has left a sour taste in their mouth, when old Dixie's left a sour taste in everyone's mouth and all that, I think you should, everyone, if you're listening and, you know, you've given up on Impact, put that shit aside and check this out. I think it's something you're going to really enjoy. And so, like, I can't wait. So, like, when we can do this again, when I can join you guys for the pay-per-views, you know, this was definitely one I'm watching. It's like, ah, I wish I was there with you guys. You know.
Yeah, and then we can just talk about it, like, not over the phone. Like,
right.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. For sure. So, our going by our scale, horns up, horns down, horns in the middle, I'm giving this horns way up.
Okay.
You know, and it didn't break the bank like the AEW pay-per-views cost. Like, when Mrs. Snowy says, you know, oh, how much is this one? I'm kind of like, can I lie? Yeah.
Can I lie?
You know.
Does she open the cable bill or do you?
Yeah, well, she handles all the bills, so yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, horns way up, and I can't wait till we start seeing him.
You'd hear her yell, "This isn't fair," and you'd be like, oh, "I'm fucking dead."
Oh, that's it. She likes the, she, you know, and of course, so do I. When you get the pay per views that are only $30 or $20, like the last FWA was $20, and it's like, okay, I'll take that. Shit.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, and like I guess the biggest question going forward from now, though, is like, where does Omega go from here? Like, he's got four world titles, technically.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I know Andrade has challenged him in AAA for the Mega Championship. Whether he retains or not, who knows? It looks like after Dynamite last night that they're pushing towards Omega versus Orange Cassidy at Double or Nothing.
Right.
It'll be a good match. I don't see Orange Cassidy winning, though, or whoever's in that match. They still have to decide the who's actually going to be facing him, but it's more than likely going to be Cassidy.
It looks like they're building that. So we might as well get right into last night as we speak. AEW's, like, you guys probably don't want to go through the whole card, but this was kind of something special. The Blood and Guts match.
Yep.
Speaking of old school wrestling, this was basically War Games.
Yep. It was like the old, more like the old school War Games. It's not the WWE's version.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. Yeah. They kind of have their own idea of what. No, yeah.
When they have War Games with no roof.
Yeah, no roof. And you're allowed to have pinfalls in NXT's War Games.
Actually, I'm good with that.
Okay. Well, yeah, with the Blood and Guts version, it's more like the old school WCW War Games where there's a roof on the cage. It's the same thing where it's like the match doesn't officially start until all 10 men are in the ring. And the only way to win is by submission or surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I totally get that. But like a fall is more, you know, unless you have someone in the sharpshooter or the figure four or the Boston Crab or whatever, like if someone is just saying, I quit, I've had enough, that's nowhere near as exciting as a pinfall.
That's true. Yeah. Oh, and in the NXT version too, since they have no roof, that allows them to do pretty incredible spots off the top of the cage.
Right.
And B, they also have this other rule that if a member of the team escapes the cage, they forfeit the match for their team. But thankfully, that hasn't happened yet. And don't think, if it stays on NXT, I don't think it will. But that was not the case, though, with this match last night, obviously, with the way it ended. Because, while the match inside the cage was pretty brutal, and like I just wish there were no commercial breaks. That's what kind of ruined it.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. Fucking commercial breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like the actual action going into it was like throughout the match was absolutely incredible. There was a lot of blood and
lots of color. Yeah, I was kind of surprised.
And all the men participating in this match had a lot of guts. So like I give them props for going into it. And like there was even a point where I think it was Ortiz fell between the ring and the inside of the cage.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine that was very uncomfortable. But because what else was there? Like at some point during a commercial break, somebody pulled up the padding from the ring and exposed the pine. So I don't know when that happened, because you like it may be picture in picture, but it's on such a small screen. And
I hate
through advertisements, so I just fast forwarded through that part. And when it came back, I was like, "Oh, the ring's destroyed. Cool.
Oh, the ring's destroyed, and everyone's bleeding. What the fuck?"
Yeah, I really need to see that insurance commercial. Yeah, thanks.
Yep.
And you come back from that insurance commercial, and Ortiz is stabbing MJF with a fork.
Yeah. Yeah, and like at some point, I think Sean Spears took one of the turnbuckles off one of the corners.
Yeah,
like everything was—it was just mayhem. It was like one of those things on comedy shows where it's like you're about to have an epic battle, and then it just says scene missing, and then it just shows the aftermath. then the ending of the match though came when MJF got out of the cage. I didn't know you were allowed to do. Like, I thought that was a big no-no in War Games matches, but apparently not in this one.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, so he gets out of the cage and starts scaling it and climbs onto the top. So Jericho, naturally, being that he's the leader of the other team, follows him. And, I just kind of want to put a little asterisk in here that all the members of the Inner Circle were wearing prison jumpsuits. And on the back of everyone's jumpsuit had a prison from their hometown, and Jericho said Stony Mountain Penitentiary on the back of his.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yes, yeah, so Jericho, Jericho up in Winnipeg.
Right on.
Ah. Yeah. But anyway, as both guys were fighting on top of the cage, kind of just they weren't showing any action happening in the cage at that point. It was just mainly focused on MJF and Jericho beating each other up on the top, and they both put each other in each other's submission holds. Neither man tapped out. And then, yeah, in the end, MJF got Jericho to the edge and threatened to throw him off if the other members of the Inner Circle didn't surrender on his behalf, which they did. So that's the Pinnacle picked up the win by MJF being the little chicken shit heel that he is. And yeah. But then he ended up throwing him off the cage anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, what was the big? There's a lot of There's a lot of internet scuttlebutt going on about
onto the solid steel concrete cardboard mattress.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are like saying how it looked bad. Like, it's not so much that they had a problem with Jericho landing on a crash mat. It was so much that it just kind of didn't look that great. Like, the camera angle was wrong, and like the part that he landed on was obviously like it was either like really thin wood or cardboard even. And when he landed, you could see the underside of it, and it's like, oh, okay, they didn't paint the underside of it, so that's obviously made it look a little hokey.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that I think that was the main gripe that the internet wrestling community has with it, is that it's they just
shot like if he would have went like through a stage part onto a mat that you couldn't see. Cool. They could have done that.
Yeah. Something like that, perhaps.
Or if they just like, if they showed it from like MJF's perspective per se, or like the audience perspective, where it just showed him pushing Jericho off and you just didn't see him land.
Mm-hmm.
That probably would have looked cool too.
Right.
And then there was like another like little like when everyone was around Jericho checking to see if he was okay, you could clearly see Jericho like opened his eye and looked at the camera and then closed his eyes again.
Oh yeah, that stuff like that just drives me nuts.
Yeah, I guess he didn't realize that the camera was on him, but still, like, come on, man, how long you been doing this? You should know not to open your eyes.
Oh yeah, right. Sell it.
Yeah,
for all it's worth.
Yeah. But, like, overall, the match was absolutely incredible. And I didn't have a problem with the finish. Like, a lot of people didn't like the surrender finish, but I thought it really played well into MJF's character. And right. he's gonna use that as fuel to really hype himself up next week. You can bet on that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely going to keep this going. Probably... though without Jericho, like this is kind of like, because we know as heavy music fans, bands are going to start touring soon, mm-hmm. and I imagine that Fozzy is going to be on the touring path. Is this kind of a way to write them out?
Yeah, for sure. Because, like, yeah, bands are starting to tour certain states in America again. Fucking Megadeth announced a tour that they were supposed to have before the pandemic with Lamb of God, Trivium, and In Flames. That's happening again later this year. So
the only reason I wasn't going to go to that tour is because I've seen them all multiple times.
Oh, yeah. Many times. Every one of those bands.
If it would have come here, yeah, I would have been there.
Of course, guaranteed. Yeah.
But, like, am I going to go all the way to Minneapolis for a tour of everyone that I've seen? No.
If it comes here, front row center, for sure.
Yeah, but, exactly.
But, yeah, no, that's not a travel. That's not a destination.
If it was, say, Megadeth and three bands I haven't seen before, maybe.
Yeah. Sure.
I've traveled to see Megadeth twice. First time was for Gigantour, but that was like a whole festival type thing, and that was like the only the second time I've seen Megadeth at that point.
Okay. But that was the one here, right?
No, that was the first Gigantour in 2005.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was the one with it had like Dream Theater, Fear Factory, Symphony X, a bunch of other bands that I wanted to see. So yeah, Nevermore, they were on there too. So yeah. That's why I went to that. And then I traveled again to see Megadeth in Saskatoon because they didn't come here for this tour. It was when they played Rust in Peace front to back. Oh, so okay. I had to go see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the all-time great records.
Yeah. And then also Testament and Exodus were opening. So, yeah, right there. That's
the selling point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what's again to all of our listeners, this is what you get with this show. We're four, you know, extreme metal fans that kind of got together through a love of pro wrestling. So you kind of got to put up with our where we kind of fall off the rails a bit.
Yeah.
You know,
it happens. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's less of a radio show, more of, it's a conversation. We're just having conversations.
There we are. Yeah. There we are.
Yep.
I'm so glad if you're listening. Thank you so much as well. With Blood and Guts. Okay. The War Games, you know, that was the only match that was live, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The rest of the match was pre-taped.
Right.
The rest of the show was pre-taped. Sorry.
Right. So they actually did the right thing. And they gave a 45-minute window to anyone that wanted a refund, I guess, before War Games went down.
Only 5 people wanted a refund.
Okay, that's not too bad. What about you guys? The three of us, we show up, we're expecting to see a full card live. Okay, then we're looking at I've been to closed circuit matches. I went to WrestleMania 2 and watched it on the big screen, but it was live. Okay. Like I wasn't in the building, but it was live on the screen and all that. These were taped matches. What would you guys be saying when they said, okay, this is the format for tonight's show?
Well, the fans I'm pretty sure they went into detail about that before they even purchased tickets, but it would kind of seem deceptive if they didn't. Mm-hmm. but I don't know. I think I'd be okay with it. Like just kind of like hang out, watch an episode of Dynamite with a bunch of other people and have some drinks, you know, basically.
Right.
And then the live shit happens and you're like, oh shit. Okay.
There's a match.
So it might actually the War Games would definitely make it worth it then.
Yeah, in my opinion, I wouldn't be opposed to it, and I think tickets were only like $25 American. So
okay, well never mind. I'm thinking
you're paying like $35.
Yeah, okay, I would do that. All right.
Yeah, I paid $60 to see Judas Priest and Anthrax. So fuck yeah, I'll pay.
Yeah, that's worth it.
Yeah,
I paid like $50 to see Priest and Saskatoon a couple.
Okay, that's right.
And the only reason that tour didn't come here, speaking of getting off the rails, the only reason that tour didn't come here is because there was a booked Jets game for that night, but they didn't get to the playoffs.
Right. Yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah.
Yeah. like my the point is I've paid a lot more money to see stuff. So I like if I paid I only paid $30 when Raw came here in February last year. That's fine. That was fine. I wouldn't pay the $700 to be on the floor on the hard cam side.
Holy jeez, that's brutal. That's brutal.
But no, like yeah, like fucking $25 American to see an AEW show. Fuck yeah, I would have.
And it's I think the War Games kind of makes it a special event as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's like, well, yeah, it's like AEW putting their spin on an old classic that we've been we were reintroduced to the War Games over the past like since 2017 since NXT started doing it.
Right.
It was cool seeing that again, but. Like seeing like two different companies have a different spin on a certain match type is always fun to me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I get that for sure.
Yeah.
Now I guess the next big event coming up is going to be the Double for Nothing.
Yeah, Double or Nothing on.
Well, there's WrestleMania Backlash first, but that's gonna suck. So yeah, Double or Nothing.
Yeah, yeah. We said the next big event.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. See how the WWE doesn't even register in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I know. Like, I don't like. I've completely forgot. I don't even know when WrestleMania Backlash. when I don't even know what that is. Like since I stopped watching, as I said on the last episode.
Next weekend.
Next weekend. Okay.
I don't even know the card aside from like. Two matches, so yeah. Like,
okay, so if it's next weekend, I doubt we'll be recording again. Well, I don't know. We might have to sit down and do this again to do our predictions.
Yeah, true.
Help us.
Yeah, but I'll turn into the pay per view, but I'm not watching Raw. Fuck that.
Right.
Yeah.
which is going to make the predictions even more fun because I don't know what the hell's going on.
No, as I said on the last episode, I quit watching the main roster product, but it seems like some cool shit's happening on SmackDown now. And like Aleister Black is back and he's doing these promos where he's talking about this father figure of his, which looks suspiciously like The Undertaker. And Cesaro's getting kind of a main event push now. And I guess even more interesting now is like as of this last week, Daniel Bryan lost a loser leaves town match against Roman Reigns and apparently his contract expired. So,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. So of course, as soon as something like that happens, of course the internet pundits go into overdrive and all that. And there's a lot of speculation as to what Brian is going to do next. Like, is he going to re-sign? Like, we know he's still got the wrestling itch. He still wants to get out there and entertain. So there's talk, you know, is he going to go to AEW? What about Japan? What about Mexico? Like even Impact. Do you guys want to put your prediction hat on and maybe throw out an idea?
It's going like we want Omega Bryan now.
Yeah.
Right.
I wouldn't mind seeing that, but
that'd be cool. But AEW's has like 80 talent already.
Yeah. Like it's kind of getting a little overbooked. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll just go back to Ring of Honor. Who knows?
But maybe for like a one shot pay per view.
Yeah.
Like I can't see him signing on full time for Ring of Honor. But honestly, if I was, you know, bestowed the honor of being a wrestling god and I can basically make people go and do whatever I chose, I would be tapping him to either go to Impact or Ring of Honor. Like he's name value that might help there.
Yeah, but then you also have to look at the other side of the coin, where he was kind of saying in interviews recently, or maybe it was just because he just was kind of sick of being in WWE and working with their the way they work, their style of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of hinted that he just kind of wanted. He didn't have that passion that he used to have because he said in the main event of WrestleMania, he kind of felt out of body and like he didn't enjoy himself like he used to. It didn't feel right, you know?
Right.
So I'm thinking maybe he might just stay home with his kid, with his kids for a while.
Who knows? Oh, well, God help him then. I imagine his kids' kids are great, but I don't know if I could live full time with a Bella. Like,
well, Bree seems a lot cooler than Nikki, from what I've seen.
Okay. Well, I certainly hope so. But I, yeah, or maybe this, I don't know. Like, there's the idea of the Legends contract, or they could just sign him to do nothing. And or sign him so he doesn't go to AEW.
Yeah, but that would kind of suck. Like,
oh, it totally waste him.
Yeah, but and if I'm being honest, like there are of course those going to be the internet wrestling community guys that are like, oh well, hopefully he goes somewhere where he'll be used properly. And I'm just like, well, how the fuck has he not been used properly in WWE? Like, if anything, out of any of the internet darlings, he's been used more properly than anybody. Recent years. Like, he main evented WrestleMania, like, just a month ago, for starters.
And right.
How many times has he been world champion? Like, five, I think?
Yeah, and he got over on his own.
Yeah, and he's a Grand Slam, like, he had one of the best heel runs in recent memory a couple of years ago when he did the eco-friendly Daniel Bryan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I still don't understand how that character could be a heel, but hey, Vince McMahon be Vince McMahon.
You're going to be environmentally friendly, okay? But yeah. Make everybody hate you.
Yeah, which that I don't understand. Like, because environmentally friendly is a good thing. Straight edge is a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like they made Punk a total heel just for not doing drugs, for not drinking, for not screwing around. Like where we come from, straight edge is awesome. I could never be straight edge. Okay. But it's so cool.
More power to you.
More power to you. Yeah. We all know lots of cool straight edge guys in the hardcore scene. I'm not booing those guys. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, the drummer for Blade, Mackenzie, he's straight edge and he's a fucking dope dude. Like,
there you go. I saw what you did there.
He's an awesome guy. There we go.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Well, if Daniel Bryan does choose to go somewhere else, do you think all of his personal effects are going to be sent to him in a fucking garbage bag?
Well, that's a tough one. Like, I mean, he didn't get released.
Does Vince want to get a Cesaro uppercut? Because that's what would probably fucking happen.
As long as it's a biodegradable garbage bag.
There we are. And of course, everyone knows exactly what we're giggling about and all of that. Just the whole Mickey James garbage bag thing. And apparently, like they've already said, okay, this is the result of this guy. I think Mark Corona.
Yeah.
Was his name. And they apparently showed him the walking. They gave him his walking papers for that reason, and all that. But that just doesn't. I just don't know if I totally buy that.
Like, no,
that's the reason.
I think they mainly just did that to save face. You know,
like, right?
Like they probably released him just to make good, and then they're probably gonna hire him.
But quietly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or there's also the thought that with post WrestleMania, there's so much restructuring and hires and fires and all that he could have been on the chopping block to begin with.
And yeah, that's impossible.
This was the reason. Okay, well, here, regardless. Okay, like what a Bush fucking league thing to do, honestly. Yeah. You know, like, what kind of message are you saying? Like, okay, even if it's like, you know, you're just being careless, you're being thoughtless, you're putting your stuff into to something that where it won't get wet, or you know, it's just the idea, the connotations that a garbage bag have. Yeah. Just the symbolism. What are you thinking? Yeah, the symbolism, for sure.
Yeah, here's your shit. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, pretty much. And like, I could see if she was disabled backstage or whatever, and everyone was just tired of her crap.
Yeah,
you know, and that I could see. But by any accounts, like everyone, she was a good worker. Everyone seemed to like her.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. I don't think her marriage to the NWA champion is a threat to the company.
No.
or anything. So it's just none of this. It just, I don't know. I think it's just someone wasn't thinking.
Well, it definitely wasn't an isolated incident either, because a lot of other people, even from last year's cuts, Maria Kanellis said she had the same thing happen to her.
Wow. So if Kanellis went on social media, we might have been talking about this last year then.
Yeah, for sure. And even this year, Chelsea Green said that she even got the garbage bag. She didn't even get her own stuff. She got some of Natalia Neidhart's stuff.
Oh, geez.
A couple pairs of wrestling boots that weren't hers, and then she got this one top that was like pink and black. There's only one person who wears pink and black, as far as
I know. Uh-huh. Why not? Why can these people just not go and get their shit? Okay.
Once you're fired, you're just like escorted from the premises and...
It's like any other job. If you're there when they fire you, if you're in the building, the boss has to walk you out.
Mm.
That's what happened to me when I got fired from Giant Tiger.
I imagine like they would do that if you were a risk of throwing a chair through a window or punching the secretary on the way out or whatever. But like, how much of a threat would these people to be to like just to come in and grab my shit and leave?
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know.
But I understand. Yeah, that's procedure. So no one does that, which makes me think, like, I love the branch manager of the company I work for. We get along great. We got a lot of geeky things in common, and we laugh together at least once a day, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if, I couldn't, like, if the company were to let me go, okay, and I wanted to do something physical about that, he's not going to stop me. You know what I mean? Like, there's no one in the building that physically intimidates me. And that's not that I'm some big badass or whatever, but, you know, like, what is your branch manager? And this isn't just me. This is anyone. What are they really going to do? You know?
Obviously, I'm no doubt in my mind that there have been incidences where people have gotten fired and have gone absolutely apeshit, destroyed company property.
Right.
But, so I guess it's just a safety procedure protocol. But even these people who work like desk jobs in cubicles, like you always see them walking out with like a box of their stuff.
Right.
to the elevator.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. At the end of the day, though, it's good fodder for shows like this.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think we spoke last episode where we thought Mickie James was going to go, and I don't think she's going to be hurt.
Okay, can I go off the rails for just a second?
Oh, hey, you might as well.
Yeah.
We all know Jinder Mahal has returned.
Yep.
And do you want to know what they named his teammates?
Oh, boy.
Veer and Shanky.
Veer and Shanky?
And Shanky.
Oh.
Is that, do they have last names, or is that just...
Nope, just Veer and Shanky.
Hmm. They're foreigners. Do they really need last names?
Yeah, I don't know. Veer and Shanky.
Let's name one Shanky.
Well, oh yeah, by the way, like I know main event hasn't aired yet, and I know how everybody loves to watch that show, so spoiler alert, Jinder Mahal is back.
Yeah, don't hinder the gender.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I like how I messaged you the other day. I'm like, that was the best part of Raw. And you were like, that happened on 205. I love it.
No,
on,
that's like, not that
main event. I was like, oh, what?
Yeah, that wasn't even on Raw.
You know, Raw's terrible when.
Yeah.
Okay, so what days are SmackDown on now? Okay, Raw is still Friday. Monday. It is Friday.
Yeah. Friday.
All right, who's watching TV Friday night?
Well, everybody now, because they can't go anywhere.
Okay, yeah, but a pandemic-free world. I remember, okay, when I was a teenager, there was a cop show. It's called Miami Vice. I'm sure you guys at least heard of it.
Yep.
It was huge. Okay. The soundtrack, the theme song was a big hit. It was getting huge ratings. Guys, for some reason, were dressing up like them, and it was huge. But it was on Friday night. I never saw an episode of Miami Vice because it was Friday night. Like, what is a teenage guy like me doing on a Friday night? I'm not in front of the fucking idiot box. I'm fishing in the liquor store, or, like, I don't understand.
Or we're at the Park Theater for a concert.
Right, or I was at a show, or, so who's watching TV Friday night? Like, what are SmackDown ratings like?
I think they're, like, around, like, the 1 million mark, 1.5 million, same as Raw, but, like, I think their mentality behind it is that it's on from 7 till 9, and they think people don't go out until like 10 o'clock on Friday nights.
Oh, okay. Something.
So that's at least, like, I'm pretty sure that was their mentality when they initially moved to Fridays back in the day. Cause SmackDown was like the Thursday show for the longest time. Then it's like, oh, we're moving to Fridays. And then it went back to Thursdays, and then it was live. Then, so it was on Tuesdays.
And that can't be good for viewership if you're bouncing around a lot.
Oh no, that's what happened to a lot of shows on, ironically, on Fox that got canceled because they kept on moving them around, and nobody knew when they were on, so the ratings fell. That's what happened to Futurama initially because they kept on changing the day it was on, so nobody watched it.
Right.
They actually
put it totally at that.
They poked fun at that in the Star Trek episode. Yeah, at the beginning, William Shatner's voice go, "Captain's log, air date, unknown."
There we go. Yeah, and I guess in Canada is SmackDown Friday nights as well.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, fair enough. Do you guys have anything else we want to contribute to this segment?
No, all I gotta say is, like, it was kind of a classless move from the most from the biggest wrestling company in the world, and kind of seemed a little odd that Vince McMahon himself didn't address it and only Triple H and Stephanie did.
Right.
Well, he might didn't not even know what fucking happened.
Yeah, he might not even know what's going on.
Yeah. He probably doesn't know what's going on with a lot of things in his life right now.
Probably not.
Judging by the look of him, he probably only gets like 3 hours of sleep every night.
If so.
Probably. I'm not one for Deadpools, but I think I might be picking Vince next year.
No, well, yeah.
No,
he's either immune to everything, or he has every disease known to man, and a gust of wind could probably kill him.
Right.
Or one of the last two people on Earth will be him.
Yeah.
Keith Richards are going to fight over Betty White. Yeah.
Hell
in us.
Yeah.
What about what's going on? I'm hearing some sort of version of Lucha Underground is fighting to make its way out.
Yep.
What do we know about that? Has anything really been announced?
Well, on the season finale of MLW last week, I don't remember the guy who runs Lucha's name. It's L something F or whatever the fuck.
Okay.
Name. I don't remember. And it just like went screen went to black, and then it cut to him in his little office like he had in Lucha Underground. And then he's like, on this date, we're coming back and blah, blah, blah. And I built a new temple. And now it's called Azteca Underground.
So would you, are you excited for this?
I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, I enjoyed, provided we can.
Underground, so I'm gonna watch this, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have never watched one single episode of Lucha Underground, so I think I need to go back and binge watch all four seasons before this comes out.
Yep.
Right, right. Well, yep. there were times where Lucha Underground kind of got a little too TV show-ish.
Well, it's presented that way, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it totally is. Even more so than like the WWF or AEW or anything. But the in-ring, okay, was fresh and exciting, and it was people that I didn't see every week that I might have only read about on the internet or the rags or something.
Mm-hmm.
All that. So, yeah, I really enjoyed Lucha Underground.
Yeah, like it had more of a cinematic approach, didn't it?
Sorry?
But it had more of a cinematic approach, did it not?
I didn't think in terms of matches like we have now, but there was a lot of vignettes in between matches and the way they introduced characters.
Okay.
And, like stuff like that like went to the extreme, and the big boss, the owner of Lucha Underground, was like Evil Vince times, you know, if Vince was a character in the Scarface movie or something, you know, like that's, for a description off the top of my head and all that. But once the bell rang, Lucha Underground delivered.
Okay.
In a lot of ways. So, yeah.
And most of their guys are signed now, too. So, like.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is Brian Cage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, shit, that's right.
Ricochet, Prince Puma.
Right.
Morrison.
Yeah.
Huge heel.
Jeremiah Crane, Sammy Callahan.
Oh, yeah.
Rey Mysterio, like Phoenix and Pentagon. So,
And of course, they had. Wasn't Matt Stryker and Vampiro were the.
Yeah, yep. Commentators.
The commentators, yeah. Yeah, no, it was a fantastic show. And if you can find it.
Io Shirai is signed because she was in Lucha Underground.
Okay.
So I guess.
She had a match with. She had a match with Pentagon.
Oh.
Season 3.
Oh, okay. See, I should go back and, you know, get a refresher on it as well. It'd be interesting to see where they're going with that. Okay, and one of your Mud Show cards is coming up. Okay, like they're really calling it whatever Cornette calls
they're
it.
They're calling it Outlaw Mud Show.
Outlaw Mud Show is coming up, and this is obviously a total rib on Jim Cornette, because that's what he calls, you know, a lot of these quote unquote garbage shows.
Yeah.
Cornette's gonna shit himself even more because Ricky Morton is gonna be wrestling on CZW Outlaw Mud Show.
Oh, okay, so it's a CZW show.
No, it's a GCW show.
Oh, Game Changer, right.
Yeah.
Okay, they have I don't know if we're do you have a ballpark date when Outlaw Mud Show is happening?
Saturday, June 19th.
Okay.
So maybe I'll be able to join you guys for this, because you have me at Ricky Morton.
Yeah.
Okay.
No matter what Morton does, even if he just comes out and, you know, waves to the audience and everyone goes, "Yay, Ricky Morton." Okay,
well,
I'll do that.
Cornette had a shit fit about the last time Ricky wrestled for GCW because he wrestled Joey Janela.
Jelly Nutella.
Yeah.
Joey Nutella.
Yeah. But
my question is, if Ricky Morton is in a singles match, who is he going to make the hot tag to when he gets beaten up forever?
himself.
Well, no, there's something to be said about muscle reflex. You know, like there could be a time when he, you know, because there you're right. Oh, you know, he would take the shit kicking, and he has to tag out Robert into it. He's got to make the hot tag and all that. I could see, just out of muscle reflex, him jumping to an empty corner looking for a tag, and he's not even there. Like, now, how do you, well, I guess you could say, oh, just all those years of Morton, you know, tagging out to Robert. No, Robert always being in his corner. It was reflex. He would look for the tag in his sleep.
Yeah. Muscle memory. That sounds like an angle they would go with on like an indie show or something like that.
Right. And
the crowd would react to it because they know exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm. We got to stop putting these ideas out in the universe. We're going to see all this shit coming up and we'll be like, okay, where's our booking job?
Yeah. We're gonna be like that Leonardo DiCaprio meme from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where he's just like holding the beer, pointing at the TV screen.
That's us, yeah.
Yeah,
we did that. I know. Fair enough. So, looking forward to that, I gotta say, and whatever gives Cornette, you know, fuel, because I listen to both shows every week, and yeah, he just. All this stuff, just you can see, you know, and I don't know how much of a work it is, but yeah, you could see over the internet. You could
still,
you know, you can hear his temple throbbing.
Yeah, you can hear the vein in his forehead.
Hear the vein. That's right. And that either makes me say, like, dude, like, really, like, okay, don't watch it. Don't worry about it, you know, but that gives him fodder for his show, mm-hmm. because the majority of his listeners.
That's what they want to hear.
That's what they want to hear, because they're old timers like me, you know, and while I agree with a lot of stuff he says, there's a lot of stuff that makes me just say, fucking relax, you know,
like, yeah.
I don't, yeah. Okay. Kenny Omega did a match with a doll 10 years ago in another country. Fucking get over it.
That was in,
you know,
DDT in Japan.
Yeah, like no one saw it. You're the only one keeping it alive.
Yeah.
And I wonder if he ever watched anything else from DDT, because it's been way more ridiculous than that, and he would have an aneurysm.
Oh, probably.
Was that DDT, they have like a doll wrestler. I don't remember what they named it, but it was their like Iron Man champion for a while.
Oh god.
Don't they also have a panda bear?
Like a panda bear. They had a ladder who was a competitor for a while. So they would just have one-on-one matches with ladders.
Okay. Yeah, see,
DDT is amazing. I love it. It's like, so this good.
This is just making me think of that old Simpsons episode. Like, it's the Anatomy Carbon Rod.
Yep. They had an office death match once. It wasn't really a death match, but it was just office supplies. It was so funny. I'm gonna see if I can find it right now. Remember that campsite match I sent you guys with like Omega and Ibushi?
Is this the same company that did the Invisible Man versus Invisible Stan, or is that
that was GCW?
Oh okay,
that was cool. That was funny. Oh, here we go. DDT Openweight Title: Kota Ibushi versus Yoshihiko, the doll.
Wow.
All right. I'm writing that down to not look that up. All right.
Right on.
Other things I'd rather do than that.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
So, anything else going on in our little heads? Is there anything going on, like, in the wonderful world of wrestling that we kind of want to get off our chest and
throw out there? I was trying to think of one from earlier, but it slipped my mind when we were mentioning stuff.
Well, I'll take this opportunity to hype up the next episode, where once part two of Dark Side of the Ring with Brian Pillman airs, we're going to be talking all about that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So just creating the hype. Next episode.
Right. Yes. But now that you said it, I kind of like, I want to talk about Pillman.
We got to get through both parts. We got to talk about it.
Through both parts. Yes, of course, from, the two-part episode of Dark Side of the Ring. Speaking about Brian Pillman, we're going to kind of switch gears here to our turnbuckle talk segment. Mr. Brian Pillman was, of course, one of the many Four Horsemen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it was kind of at a point where it just seemed like within, like, it's like, okay, we got this guy. We just signed him to the roster. Well, what are we going to do with him? Well, a long time ago, there was a thing called the Four Horsemen in the old NWA, and that got a lot of guys over, and that was a really big angle, and everyone made lots of money, and everyone went home happy when they're, and this, that, and another thing. Let's make him a horseman.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, it kind of stopped working. Okay, like with the Four Horsemen, and I was there right from the start with them when it was Flair, Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson, and Tully Blanchard.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of the Four Horsemen was, some of the four of the top, workers in the league all banding together, to form this super group and a combined dislike of Dusty Rhodes. Okay. Yep. Gets every one of them had their run-ins with Rhodes. Well, anyways, and the idea is, they were also classy gentlemen. And they liked to party and, it was wine, woman, and song, but we were still the best wrestlers in the world. We liked to, we wrestled hard and we played hard, and we had the Rolexes and all that. You just had the horseman vibe. And then over the years, people would retire or leave the NWA or whatever, they would replace them, and some had the horseman vibe or were there for a reason. Others made you scratch your head and go, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Definitely.
I think the what the fuck started happening when it was a Clash of the Champions. It was the early 90s. The horseman had definitely had its heyday.
Mm-hmm.
Aha, you saw what I did there.
Yeah.
Anyways, they were reuniting the horsemen. It was Flair, it was Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson was back. They needed that young blood. They needed a new Sting. They needed a new Lex Luger. Okay. And we're going to announce this on this episode of Flair for the Gold. And out comes Paul Roma. Oh, the wrestling world did a collective, huh? What? Okay, like Paul Roma's a good wrestler, and I really liked him in the Power and Glory tag team with Hercules Hernandez and all that. Paul Roma is not horseman material. Oh, and then over the years, Roma would leave, they'd bring this guy in, they brought Sid Vicious in. Dean Malenko was a horseman. Chris Benoit was a horseman. Mongo McMichael, which, okay, on the surface and outside the ring and all that, he made a good horseman.
Yeah, even though he was not really a wrestler.
Couldn't wrestle for shit. Yeah. Okay.
Doesn't Mongo now, isn't he having really bad health issues
too? He is. That's true. We give all the best. It sounds like we're ragging on the guy, but we're really not. Okay. He just didn't have a very good work rate. But from just a character, and I hate that word, from a character standpoint, he was horseman material. Okay. A lot of the others, not so much. I think the last and probably best incarnation of the horseman was Flair Anderson, Tully Blanchard, and Barry Windham when he turned heel and won the United States Championship, because you had Flair, world champion, Tully, Arn, tag team champions, and Barry Windham was the United States champion. I like how during Blood and Guts, that I think it was a Ross or Schiavone that brought up that Tully Blanchard, okay, while he was in the corner of the Pinnacle Tonight, he was one of the originals in the very first War Games.
Yep.
Back then. Did you guys catch that?
I did, yes.
Yeah, I marked out totally for that.
Well, they actually said he was in the first Blood and Guts, but it's like, that's a legal loophole they had to get around.
Right. Yeah. But we all kind of knew what they were winking at.
Yeah, we knew what they were saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the Horsemen over the years had some amazing members, some not so much. And then it kind of makes you think, well, maybe we can put on, you know, our fantasy booker, you know, our fantasy booker cap here and kind of give some ideas of who from any era, any federation might have fit into that early incarnation, the late 80s incarnations of the Four Horsemen when they ruled the world and all that. And it really got me, like the old schooler in me really got me going and all that. So I can't wait to dive into this week's Turnbuckle Talk. So one of you guys have a suggestion you might want to start with, please?
I do. My first suggestion actually comes from a guy who was around at the same time, like late or mid to late 80s as the horseman. Okay, so we all know in the WWF around the same time, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff did that really long program with Hulk Hogan over the world title.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. Everybody loved it, et cetera, et cetera. And then after that was over, for lack of a better term, Paul Orndorff kind of spun his wheels a little bit.
Right.
Before making the jump to WCW. Kind of made the jump to WCW a little bit late. Had he jumped to WCW after his program with Hogan had wrapped up, I have no doubt in my mind he would have made a great horseman.
He would have made an excellent horseman. Between the robes, the anti-Hogan stance, which, while they never brought it up, the 80s, you know, from 1985 to like 90, okay, it was Flair versus Hogan. Even if it didn't happen, that was money in wrestling fans' minds. So Orndorff, yes, this is a great choice because he would have had the anti-Hogan, and it just would have been a good fit all the way around. It definitely would have been better than the dudes with attitudes or or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, what about you, Ducky?
MJF.
There's a good choice. Yeah, because what they did with Luger and Sting, okay, they were looking for the young guy that, okay, we need a young, fresh talent that we can mold into horseman material and all that. We can bring them along our way. And they did try that with Luger, and it was very successful. Of course, but with both Luger and Flair, you know,
technical issues. I got kicked out of the call. I'm back.
Oh, you're back. Oh, okay. We didn't even notice because you had a really good choice in MJF.
Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as I said that, you started talking and then the call just went goodbye.
Oh, wow. Oh. Yeah.
Well, we're back.
Yeah. We're back. And I can't wait till we're in Matt's home studio.
Yeah. We're this.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're on a roll here. We're 2 for 2. This is fantastic. I'm going to throw out Ted DiBiase.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, okay, you'll know. Okay, probably his most famous, okay, persona or whatever was the Million Dollar Man.
Okay, he's still doing that to this day.
Really? Okay.
On NXT, nevertheless.
On NXT, yeah, because he's now, like, trying to make Cameron Grimes broke or something.
He's trying to make him jealous of his money.
Okay. Well, aren't they trying to while the Million Dollar Man was the self-made man, they're trying to make Cameron Grimes the Million Dollar Man that got lucky, basically, they're doing.
Cashed out on GameStop stocks back when that was ruling the headlines.
Well, if Ted DiBiase hadn't gone to the WWF, or kind of took his Million Dollar Man character, scaled it down a bit, and went to Crockett instead of Vince. Okay, I think because he was so over, you know, in Mid-South and then later the Universal Wrestling Federation and all that, okay? Like, if the fans in the Crockett territory would recognize him immediately, he would be over immediately and becoming a horseman, you know, and fitting that mold would have been bank for Crockett. Oh, for sure. And then who knows how long it could have gone. Then you could eventually have broken him off. And Flair DiBiase, okay, without the Million Dollar Man gimmick, would, holy jeez, that would be a clinic. You know how we talk Flair Steamboat matches from 1989? We would be talking Flair DiBiase.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course the laugh. that is a horseman laugh.
Yeah, right, it sucks. Right. It does suck in real life that Ted DiBiase is an asshole. But
well, so are a lot of people. Don't meet your heroes, kids.
Yep. Don't meet your heroes, yeah.
Don't meet Ted DiBiase. Yeah.
What else you guys got?
Well, I actually thought there was a period, as you all know, and in 2017, 2018, around there, when Brock Lesnar was the Universal Champion. My pick isn't Brock Lesnar, by the way, just so you know. It's not Brock Lesnar. There was a point on Raw when Brock Lesnar was the Universal Champion and he wasn't around anymore. At that time, The Miz was the Intercontinental Champion, and he was basically the top champion for most of the time on the Raw, on the brand. And the promos he would cut, my God, I could just picture that Miz, his promo style, that husk that he has in his voice now, the suits that he wears, the way he carries himself, would have been perfect. Perfect fit for the Horseman.
Yeah. Okay. This isn't like during, like when he was over huge, when he was champion, that was like, I really wasn't paying attention. There was about a year or two where I wasn't paying attention to pro wrestling in general, and that was when Miz was the first, his first reign,
his first world title. That was 2010, but now, in my opinion, he wasn't ready for it back then, and he hadn't perfected his promo game like he has now. Like, he didn't have that something in his voice nowadays that he didn't have back then,
right? Well, he's mature.
He developed over time. And like, he's got like, it's like this smoky raspiness to his voice that he has now. And like, just the way he carries himself, the way he was able to play off a crowd.
Right.
And like, calling himself the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. And the way he wore that belt with pride. And like, And yeah, he could have easily fit in very well with the Horseman. So let him is Diva.
I'm just lying. That's right. And having Maurice around would help.
Oh, for sure.
Because whenever there was a woman around and all that, like they always made sure that like any females that were affiliated with the Horsemen, they always put her over big time and all that. One of the things, now, I might have said this on the show before, but I don't remember now, but with Maurice, I would say, okay, I want you to go out there and I want you to talk. Just never speak English. Okay, let Miz go and do his promo. Okay, whatever he's going to do. And then you back it up, but angry and in French. Like, she should never speak English, because that would just irritate the piss out of Americans. Okay, like it would.
Yeah.
And it would have been over big time.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I really think that's, once again, I'm putting this out to the wrestling universe, and I really shouldn't, because someone's going to take that idea. But the Miz and Maurice, good idea. What about you, dude?
I'm still thinking.
Okay, well,
plan ahead of time.
Yeah. While you're thinking, before Tully Blanchard made his way to Crockett, he was Southwest Tag Team Champions, I believe, in the old Continental Territory. No, he was in Southwest Territory. He was Tag Team Champions with Gino Hernandez. Okay, now you probably guys would remember Gino Hernandez most from, unfortunately, the Dark Side of the Ring episode back from the first season.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. He had the connection with Tully. Like, Blanchard went to Crockett, Hernandez went to World Class. Okay, but Hernandez was still doing the I'm better than you, I'm richer than you, I've got the 3-piece suits, I'm good looking, all the women love me. They could have brought, and this is if the tale didn't end so tragically, if Hernandez didn't leave us way too soon, okay, it would have been a good fit for Blanchard to say, yeah, you know what, we need a fourth horseman, I know a guy, okay, and then, you know, but you have to tune in next week, and I'll bring my guy out, and all that. And then he introduces Gino Hernandez. He would fit right in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really think. But, you know, wrestling fate, you know, had something different for him in a different in a different federation. And that's too bad. You know, not only is it tragic we lost Gino Hernandez way too soon, but his big time angle, not only as a team, but against Chris Adams. Chris Adams left us way too soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when Chris Adams was in the UWF, that was one of my favorite reasons for tuning into wrestling.
Mm.
It was absolutely fantastic. What else you guys got?
What about Jericho?
Yes.
I could see him by the time it would have been a bet, you know, than Paul Roma, I think, because Jericho also had the mic skills even back then. Okay, and he had sure. The charisma, done the same idea with him as Luger. You know, we have this young talent up in Canada. Well, we won't hold that against him. We'll bring him up anyways. And there he is, Chris Jericho. You know, and at first he would be the student, but then, you know, as he got more and more experience on TV, then that character would come out more and more. And before you know it, Jericho probably would have been a big star a lot sooner. Good choice. Good
idea. Yeah, well, I think like the 2008 Jericho really showed that he can wear a suit very well. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Don't laugh. Okay. Right. Because as we're doing time travel here and we're playing what could have been. Okay. If we just forget all about, you know, the computerized man of the 90s and God help us, the fucking Red Rooster. If you forget all of that, okay, you take Terry Taylor after he turned heel in the UWF and then the UWF folds. Okay, what are you going to do with all of these UWF guys? Okay, just like Hernandez, you know, he would have fit in as a heel. He would have fit. He would have had the horseman vibe. and mm-hmm. feeling. Really think that he would have fit in there, because the guys can get under your skin in real life as well. Like, there's a lot of people that just don't like him in real life and all that. And if he was the best characters are like the real thing with the volume turned up.
Yeah.
So you get like he would have fit a lot better in there than the Red Rooster. That will always be the Terry Taylor I remember from the universe, from Mid-South, from the UWF.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah.
Yep.
What else you guys got?
Well, my next pick is actually something that technically did happen, but didn't last very long.
Okay.
You see, as in the mid to late 90s, Kurt Hennig was announced as a new member of the Four Horsemen. not long after he ended up turning his back and joining the NWO.
Right.
But I personally would have loved to have seen Kurt Hennig have like a full run and be like a full fledged Horseman member who wasn't just doing it to double cross like and infiltrate on behalf of the NWO and eventually turn his back on Flair and Anderson.
I have Kurt Hennig on the list.
Okay.
Yeah. Even though, like you said, well, he was kind of a horseman. Well, no, the whole thing was to position him into the NWO and then feud with Flair, which it was what it was. That did give Arn Anderson probably his most famous promo he ever did, the My Spot.
Mm-hmm.
Promo. I'm going to give you not any spot. I'm going to give you my spot in the Four Horsemen. Well, unfortunately, it was at a time, though, like the Horsemen has had its day.
Yes.
Yeah. At its day, shall we say. Yeah. Put out to pasture a long time ago. If they had brought in, I'm not saying like because I loved the only thing that I was loving about the WWF and my favorite thing ever about the WWF was Mr. Perfect.
Yeah.
Was Kurt Hennig. Yeah, because they didn't call him Kurt Hennig, and that's the only thing that I didn't like about it. They just kept calling him Mr. Perfect and then Perfect and all that. If Kurt Hennig, after his AWA title run, if he went to Crockett and became a horseman and not gone to Vince, you're right. It would have been perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for sure.
It would have been a really smooth transition. What about you, dude?
Are
you
still with us? I have sort of a controversial one because the guy is such like a douche.
Okay.
I don't know if he's he used to be a douche in real life. I don't know if he is anymore. It'd be cool to have him on the show one day, but Joey Janela.
Oh.
Well. Okay. Once again, that would be kind of the youth, the indie guy. Let's bring him. Like, he would definitely get. He would be an enigma in the territories as well. Okay, which that's let's get that going through our heads. Wrestlers today that would have fit well in the territories back then, and which territory and all that. Kind of get that going through your head for a future Turnbuckle Talk.
Right.
Okay. And all that. Yeah, I can see the, kind of like maybe Flair's little nephew my brother raised, or Janela here, Joey, little Joey was Arn Anderson's neighbor's kid.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. Like, there'd be some way that you'd be able to work him in. I could see
that. I'm having a little trouble picturing it, but maybe I'll think about it a little more after.
right.
Okay.
And my last one. Okay, and once again, we've got to do a little time traveling here. The Cody Rhodes of today, send him back in time, during like to replace Lex Luger or something. Of course, back then, I don't even know if Cody Rhodes was even alive, or he just would have been because a teenager or whatever. But
barely a fucking Yeah, still living in his daddy's balls. Barely.
just an apple in daddy's eyes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you know, all things aside, okay, a young Cody Rhodes ready to get into the world of professional wrestling, the way you see him now, okay, mm-hmm. you know, with
the way you see him now,
suits,
putting himself over all the time.
Yeah, that would help too.
Yeah,
it helped too.
Like, yeah, like I know what you mean, like the suits, the mannerisms, the way he carries himself, the way he talks. It's like all very horsemanish.
Brandy would even be the new Dark Journey. Just
yeah, okay.
I could, because that's how they would, you know, in the 80s mentality, that's where they would position her and all that. And it also helps, you know, the fact that he's a Rhodes. I'm tired of living in my dad's shadow. Every time, you know, I can't go anywhere without people wanting to know where my dad is. How's my dad doing? And how's this? How's that? I'm tired of living in my old man's shadow. Well, Cody Reynolds is his own man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and my new friends here are going to let me be my own man. And all that, which maybe you're not necessarily your own man, you know, when you're fighting to keep Ric Flair's title. And
yeah.
But that was part of the horseman magic as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think a modern day Cody Rhodes would make a fantastic horseman.
And all right on.
But do you guys have any more?
I have one more.
Okay.
My final pick was a guy who, well, showed that he could be a horseman by kind of leading his own horseman-esque fashion about 15 years ago or so. Triple H.
No. Yeah. Actually, yeah. Yeah, because they were kind of, well, like, I don't know if Evolution would have been considered like a horseman. I guess what they're trying to do was Flair was the past, Triple H was the present, and Batista is the future. Then Orton, yeah. Okay, yeah. Actually, yeah, there was four of them at one time too, right?
Yeah, and they were the only four members that ever were Evolution.
That ever were, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Like probably not, you know, like the last couple of years, you know, when he was the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he was total solo. And I couldn't see him really doing anything else, but that was like
when he started the whole CEO thing, when he was wearing the suits all the time.
Yeah.
Well, a little combination of that with, you know, the young gun, but still a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
So like 2001, 2002, Triple H mixed with CEO Triple H.
Like 2004 Triple H, when he was like, well, like when Evolution was in full swing, he was wearing the 3-piece suits and they'd have all those vignettes of them in limousines and helicopters. And he'd have the World Heavyweight Championship. He would hold it just like Flair did. And when he would be clean shaven, as opposed to having his handlebar mustache or his full beard that he has now, he when he was clean shaven and he had his like hair slicked back when it was long. And blonde, he would like, he just had that ultimate, like, he kind of did like have a bit of a Flair look to him.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I think about it,
that's kind of where they were going. They wanted their own horseman with Evolution. They gave it a little bit of a tweak, but yeah. Oh, that's, I get that.
It was a shot in the dark and it ended up working. And they kind of had that same trope too, where they were the faction that had all the gold. You know?
Mm-hmm. Right on. Well, is that it?
One more, Duck?
I can't think of it anymore.
Okay, fair enough. I'm sure at some point, maybe this time next year, you know, we could probably make this an annual thing because, like I said, when I first had this idea in mind, I was thinking right from the 40s, any league all the way up to yesterday, you know, like, and just kind of get the fantasy booking going too. So like, this is a conversation that we can visit again sometime down the line, and or we could just keep going, you know, yeah. And just make a 6-hour episode, and it would never lose steam. But I think maybe it is time to bring this crazy train into the station. Once again, thank you so much, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
How can people get a hold of us?
People can get a hold of us on Facebook at facebook.com/WrestlingNightInCanada or on Instagram at WrestlingNightInCanada.
Of course, once again, Wrestling Night in Canada is proud members of the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizardsnetwork.com. You're going to want to check out all of the amazing podcasts on that network. There's not only us, there's the Shining Wizards themselves, you know, and it's predominantly pro wrestling, but there's a lot of pop culture in there as well, including our brother program, Radioactive Metal. If you haven't quite had enough of your cool Uncle Snowy with this, you might want to check out my show over there, which I believe last episode I had two rather handsome and entertaining gentlemen from this show joining me over there and talking. Mm-hmm. You know, all things over there.
Crossover.
Yeah, crossover. That's right. That's right. We'll find more ways of getting you guys over there as well. In the meantime, and in between time, this has been another exciting episode of Wrestling Night in Canada. I'm Snowy White.
I'm Matt Copper.
I'm Dustin Murka.
Signing off.
And we're from Winnipeg, you idiots.